Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Welcome to Killing Time, hosted by two girls, one goth. I'm in a really good mood today because after this, it's early in the morning we're recording this, but after this, we're doing a full day of recording for our Patreon episodes, and I am just so giddy.
I am pumped too. I'm glad we're finally doing it. We have the material sitting there. We've just been so busy, so we're finally going to nurture this third baby of ours.
No, it's going to be fantastic.
I can't wait. I've been reading over all of our scripts. We have like four different kind of episodes that we're going to be giving you all. I don't want to give too much away, but they're all so good. And I'm just thrilled.
Giddy over it.
How are you guys doing today?
Feeling good.
Yeah, doing
Billy?
All right.
Feeling good now.
Billy?
Is Billy ever good though?
Yeah.
No, but sometimes he has a little pep in his step.
I'll get there by this afternoon.
Cool. So we'll have a very low energy right now, and then high energy for only a fraction of our listeners to listen to later. Awesome.
Yeah. No, because everybody's going to be signing up for the Patreon. You watch.
I know. That's true. I am excited. Yeah. I did have a 100 grand bar today already.
Ooh. What?
This morning.
Really?
How?
I got one from like a Postmates yesterday. I got delivered some snacks and they had 100 grand bars and they give me four. And I had one last night. I have one this morning. I'm like, why not start off the morning?
Wow.
With a nice 100 grand.
Bold. You need a little sugar high to put up with us, didn't you?
Honestly, 100 grand goes really good with a coffee.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Like highly a biscotti. Recommend. It's like an Italian. It's very, you know.
You got the crunch.
Yeah. I got the crunch. Okay, well, Billy, what day is it today? Dark day.
Today is March 3rd, and in 1934, this is when John Dillinger escaped from prison.
Yes.
Now, John Dillinger was one of the most famous outlaws in American history. He and his gang, the Dillinger Gang, robbed 24 banks and four police stations, and this is all during the Great Depression. So, you know, everybody was doing really bad. They're seeing this guy taking on the system, and he became sort of a folk hero. So on this day in 1934, Dillinger actually uses a phony pistol, which he carved with a safety razor out of wood. And he had this pistol. He used the block of wood, the razor handle, and then he covered it in black shoe polish. This is what he does now. So he pulls out this fake gun, and all the jailers, because you normally don't have a, you know, you never want a gun in jail. That's not a thing, right? Because a prisoner could take it, and then all hell would break loose. So he escapes the jail, and he actually escapes the jail in the sheriff's new Ford patrol car. So if this guy couldn't have been more loved, you know, this was going to be it. And believe me, you know, he was a bad guy. He murdered people. He murdered a veteran police officer, was not a good guy. But because of depression, people were digging him and all this stuff. So when he pulled out this wooden pistol, he rounds up the guards, and then he actually is able to get a Thompson submachine gun. And then he steals the sheriff's car and he leaves. There's a nationwide manhunt for him. He's escaped before too, but this guy is becoming a public nuisance. Now, one of the things that was happening is that there was a a pretty popular FBI agent named Melvin Purvis. And Melvin's like, I'm going to get this guy. So Dillinger is in Chicago. He is walking to the Biograph Theater, and somebody kind of narked on him and said this is where he was going to be. Federal agents led by Melvin Purvis moved in to arrest him. Dillinger pulls out a weapon. It's a real weapon this time, but he's shot four times and he is killed.
So people liked him.
Yeah.
He's, I mean, like,
he was
Robin
sort
Hood.
Of a folk
Robin
hero.
Hood. Yeah.
Like a lib- I, he wasn't giving the money away, though.
He was, but people were, he represented the rebellious spirit that everyone wished they possessed at such a time of oppression and depression.
Like a David and Goliath situation.
Sure. He was a little guy. Down the establishment. I feel like people resonate with that even today.
They yes. do. You know, and Dillinger escape plan. I know we've talked about this before.
Yes.
And that's all I know.
Yeah.
And period.
No, we will do a music bands named after crimes at some point.
But. Ooh, that's a good episode.
That is a great idea.
Okay.
Wow.
The ideas just keep coming. All right. So we are going to talk about, in True Crime Rewind, we are going to talk about famous escapes from prison. And
yes.
there has been a recent one that's been made into many, many TV shows, which we will talk about. You probably all know what that one is.
Semi-recent.
Yeah, semi-recent.
And then recent.
This is, and then we're also going to be talking about probably the most famous one, which is the escape from Alcatraz.
Yes. But until then, I mean, we have a true crime in real time that Alexis is so excited to talk about right now.
Oh, yes. The Hank, the bear?
Yes.
Hank.
Yeah. So I guess it was in Big Bear, right?
It was in
Tahoe.
Lake Tahoe. So obviously I didn't do a ton of research. I was just grabbed by the headline.
Yes.
It was very Jensen of me, frankly.
Yes.
So there was this headline that says Hank the Bear. So Hank the Bear is this giant bear that's been,
he's like obese, 500 pounds.
Breaking into Tahoe homes, eating food, breaking into garbage cans, like wreaking havoc in Lake Tahoe. And people said it was Hank. But now, apparently, he's being framed.
Yeah, Frank.
They
Hank
tested
the
DNA. They tested his DNA. Not his DNA, but they tested scenes where Hank allegedly, like, rifled. And apparently, it's not Hank's DNA.
Yeah.
No, it was like, well, and that's the thing. They're blaming poor big ol' Hank for like 25 break and enterings to the point where they're like, and I just saw this on the news. My favorite sushi place plays the news, which is really weird. So I was eating sushi, watching this news thing about Hank the Tank, and they're like, they're going to have to euthanize him because he could end up killing somebody because he yes. keeps breaking into all these homes. He has like no wherewithal. So, I mean, this is like a great moment for Hank. Apparently it's been like dozens of bears.
Yes. And we did sort of bury the lead a little bit because Hank has a nickname and it's Hank the Tank.
Yeah.
Which is the nickname of somebody on this podcast as well.
But I'm not the same kind of tank. I'm a tank of perseverance over.
I think Hank has been through a lot.
No, but he's Hank the Tank because he's fucking gargantuan. tankness doesn't relate to my size.
You're an emotional tank.
Emotional tank, tank of perseverance, tank of overcome, tank of underdogs. You know, it's not really the same context, but I appreciate the comparison, Billy.
I mean, it is the same name.
It's the same name.
Yeah, but it's not the same meaning.
Yes.
No.
Metaphorically. But I have more to add here. So Hank is 500 pounds, by the way. And yeah, they actually believed he was acting alone as he roamed the streets in Tahoe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the DNA evidence gathered suggests several bears were responsible.
Like, it exonerated him.
A gang of bears. They thought one bear was doing a gaggle of bears as criminal activity.
I'm like, why? What would like push them to be thinking that it is one bear? Like, wouldn't the more like obvious answer be that it is multiple bears? Because that would make more logical sense.
Hank is the John Dillinger of bears. He represents the freedom of bears, and he represents the independent spirit of bears. And they don't want an uprising, so they're targeting. They're making him an example. They're making an example of him. They're like, if we euthanize Hank the Tank, the other bears will know what's up, and it's a big conspiracy.
Yeah.
What a tragedy that would have been if they did euthanize poor innocent Hank the Tank, and then the break-ins continued.
Yeah.
Luckily, free media has made that impossible. Now we all know the truth. Hank is forever protected. And if you kill him, he is a martyr.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. For all bears.
Yes. I think Hank is an official firstie right now.
Don't hurt him.
Do not hurt Hank.
He's so cute. He's so round.
He's got such a little head and face and a massive body.
Massive. Like, he is like the ultimate round boy.
His little pinhead is shocking.
I know.
Like, his pinhead is real.
The guy loves to eat, you know?
The guy looks, he doesn't like to loan things. Little head.
Little Hank. All right. Well,
big ears.
We're so excited for you, Hank.
Good hearing.
Have fun rummaging around Tahoe. Eat all the food. You know, go live your second chance at a happy life.
That's right.
All right. Well, when we come back, we have got some bitching to do.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
All rise.
Call the first witness.
How do you plead? Guilty or not guilty?
All right. Welcome to On the Stand. Each week we're bringing something to the stand that we're thinking about this week, and we're either prosecuting it or defending it, having a little discussion, and then deciding if it's guilty or not guilty. Would anybody like to go first this week?
No, I want you to go first, Jack, if you have something prepared.
Are you going to think of yours as I go?
I have one, but I don't know if it measures up. Okay. So I want to see your theme. Maybe something will come to me.
Okay, I'll go first. So what I'm bringing to the stand, I can't imagine any single person would defend this. And this is just something that happened to me recently, and I just got to bitch about it for a little bit.
Love it.
So the idea of pig parking. Do you guys know what pig parking is?
No.
Okay, pig parking comes from an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Larry David, my hero, coined the term. Pig parking is when you park in a parking spot and take up more of the allotted spot than you should be given. Mm. So it's parking in a spot, moving into the second spot, and then taking up two spots instead of one, so nobody can fit next to you. Mm-hmm. Now, we all live in LA. Parking is very limited as is. Mm. So you can't even find a spot when people park normally. So trying to find a spot when somebody is now taking up two, it just causes a huge headache for anybody involved. So this happens sometimes. I fucking hate it. But the other day I was going to Starbucks. The place where my Starbucks is just like a shit show. It's a clusterfuck of a parking lot. And I go to park, and guess who's pig parking? The fucking parking enforcement. Mm. The parking enforcement took up two spots.
Ironic.
I waited for them to come back. They're going to seize candies to get themselves a little box of chocolates.
No.
I swear to God. Me. I waited. I waited next because I found a spot near them, and I was like, I got to see who it is. They're going to seize candy and parked at a diagonal in two different spots. Wow. It wasn't like they just took up a little bit diagonally.
That's shocking.
And I will say this, if Jack was a vengeful person, you would have had your video out there, and that potentially could have gone viral.
No, I'm not that type
of
gal.
But you would never do that.
Yeah. I honestly feel like the only person who could do pig parking in LA would be parking enforcement, because there would be such a wrath. That's why I don't feel like I see it very much here. It's pretty rare, because people like get in brawls over parking in LA because it's so limited.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's not super common, but of course, it's like cops and parking enforcement are the only people who, celebrities probably,
but it's
entitled
so,
people, but
yeah, but like, you should be setting an example, parking enforcement.
You'd
yeah.
think,
you know, like yeah. I can't give you a ticket, but I should be able to.
But you could do a citizen's arrest. Next time you see it, just hold yes. their arm and call the police and see what happens.
Please tape that though.
Please. This is,
I'm executing a citizen's arrest, and just let's see how that unfolds. Have Jared film it.
I'm going to do it next time. I'm just going to kind of camp out in that parking lot and wait for them to come back. Because I'm like, please, you don't do it once. A pig parker is a pig parker for life.
Mm-hmm. How many parks did a pig park? Never mind.
Yes, exactly. All right,
well, try.
Nobody's going to support pig parking, so guilty.
Guilty.
Yeah, guilty.
Bill, you go next.
I go next. Okay. Have we talked about exclamation points?
I don't think so.
No.
Now...
I think this is a good on the stand for you, Billy.
Yeah. So exclamation point, it's one of, you know, it's this primarily with emails and texting. And I know everybody knows this. So if somebody says, hey, I just did this, and you just say thanks without an exclamation point, it seems to sound
ungrateful. Like,
yes.
Like you're not really thanking them. Like a rude thanks.
Like this is how it sounds. Thanks.
Yeah, it does.
Or great.
Yes.
Instead of great. So you're forced. This is one of the things that has happened with the way that we're communicating. We're forced to over enthusiast be really, really excited over something that is fairly mundane in order to not offend the other person.
What's a prop? Yeah. Well,
that is true. There needs to be like
diplomacy for you. I don't know.
There needs to be a punctuation that's in between a period at a and an exclamation point that you just seem like in a good mood, but not like super excited.
I have the answer. What? And I do it a lot. All caps. That's the answer. I put things in all caps because I type in all caps a lot for like our scripts.
Yeah.
And I don't bother sometimes to shift back when I write because my text is on my iMessage on my computer. So I'll be like, it's a pain in the ass to turn caps off. So I just, and people are like confused by my all caps, but like good.
Mm. Like all caps is, I think, even worse than an exclamation point. It's very shocking. It's like, I'm like offended and then I like don't know what to do.
Or
and then I'm
like, are they mad at me? Or is it like not about me? Like, is their caps button, like did someone spill a glass of wine on their caps button and it won't change up? Like, it's probably not about you. Nothing's personal. So like maybe, I just think caps are like a fun wild card.
Mysterious.
Yeah. No exclamation points, all caps.
You know what? I'm going with the ital. If you can do the ital, then.
No, ital is something, ooh. It's like, and yeah, so.
It is.
It's like, it's like, ooh, ooh.
Like you were saying, like a sexual cut. It's intrigue. Like intrigue. Italics are sexual.
Or intriguing.
Yeah.
They're between flirty. The lines. It's like a look into this, look deeply into this.
What about underlined?
Underlined is
look. It's like, can you believe this? Mm-hmm. Like, no, he didn't. Is underlined.
I think I like bold. I think bold could kind of be in that realm.
But you can't bold in text. Only caps.
Yeah,
I know. There's no answer, but I think that. Well, you know, the thing with like exclamation points is, especially women, we overuse them a lot in emails because we're always trying to act like we're friendly.
We're like and not like, bother someone. Just following. We use the word just following up.
I have
just following up.
Yeah, I have consciously tried to delete. I've tried to do this for years, but it comes so naturally for women to like apologize for just being there by using like a just or an exclamation point. I've been trying so hard over the past few years. Anytime I see it, I'm like, nope, take out. Nope, take out. But then you feel rude how your message ends up being, but men can do it all the time.
But then you
time.
Look at the messages from people and they do it.
Yeah.
I'm like, people don't give a fuck about my feelings yet. And you're like tiptoeing around theirs.
Yeah, because the emails that I usually send say usually like, when the fuck are we going to have this meeting?
But Billy, this isn't a problem
you're
you
a little
have.
Bit rude.
You're
and
mean.
And then I should have put in, just checking in.
You
when
should.
The fuck are we going to have
you
this
should
meeting?
Actively be nicer.
I will. Okay.
You
I will
should,
actively
you should
do
insert
that.
Some exclamation points because we've had to have some conversations about your communication, your professional communication.
Yes.
And the bedside manner is lacking.
Yes. But you're on the up and up.
I'm not on the up and up. Exactly. All right. So exclamation points, having to use them is really what I'm putting on the stand.
No one has to.
Okay.
I say not guilty. Say guilty. I still like using them.
Me too.
I think they're
not
fun.
Not guilty.
Not guilty.
But like caps is on trial decks. Next week.
Okay, Lex.
Okay, I'm putting something on the stand that's actually not that exciting, but I feel like we'll all want to talk about it. I mean, the news lately has been like countries in Europe lawfully enacting a 4-day work week.
Oh.
So we're in a very capitalistic nation. You know what I mean? We're a nation who glamorizes overworking, glamorizes. And
glamorizes
this,
the grind,
killing yourself to work, to, you know, to succeed. Like, and I'm someone who struggles with that. So I'm just like, if they enacted a 4-day work week, I work usually over weekends, as proven today.
Yes.
So do you guys. But a third weekend a day, I might actually relax.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think you need a third weekend date. Well, I actually can't. I have no room to talk because I've always worked for myself. I've never had a 9-to-5 job, but I'm assuming coming from somebody who does, it's like Friday, you are barely off of work. Saturday, maybe you go and do something. And then Sunday, you're nursing a hangover or like one of the days you're doing errands and then you have no time to actually relax. Like you need that third day to actually enact pleasure,
self-care,
taking care of things that you need to take care of, and then like a little relaxation.
And like, you know, if it were Friday, if you needed to do stuff like call your accountant, call the bank. Like, that's a business hours thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, where is the solution there? You know? Yeah. So anyways, I'm putting the 5-day work week on the stand because like, do we even want a 4-day work week? I mean, I'm kind of like terrorized by that idea, but also intrigued by it. So like, let's talk about it and vote.
I do think that COVID has shown most people in the world that they don't need to show up to an office to work, don't need to work normal hours. Like you can get the same amount of work done in probably a smaller amount of time if you were given that time, or you can get the same amount of work done working from home or on location or wherever. So I think that after the pandemic, it's kind of like led us into this place where maybe a 4-day work week could happen, where before I think it would just never happen.
Yeah. Right. You know, and you know, one of the things that, and this has been happening in New York, the mayor's like, everybody's got to get back into work, into the office. And the reason for that is that, yes, a lot of jobs can be done at home, but there are a lot of businesses that rely on people going into work. I mean, just think about
lunch places
is the easy, but you know, if there's less people in there, you need less cleaning staff. If there's less people in there, you need, you know, like support staff. So that's one of the things that, you know, we've had for really our entire existence, we've had, you know, going into work. If a lot of people stop going into work, it's going to fundamentally change a lot of ways that, that different things
people
are going on,
other jobs,
particularly
yeah.
in a city.
Yeah,
or in
like
a,
even, yeah. you know, big offices have like, they supply snacks for their staff. You know what I mean? They supply lunch for that. You know what I mean? Like food trucks go park in front of office buildings. Like there's a lot of trickle down to be considered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think at the end of the day, just working from home is pretty unhealthy when it comes down to it.
I know some workaholics would just like never do anything else.
No.
Yeah. Not so many people meet like partners at work or make friends at work. Like, I do think it is a social component that
and it also
is
gets you out of the house, too.
Yeah.
You know, you're out, and it's like, oh, I'll stop by here on the way home or something like that. If you're just sticking at home the whole time, I think it really messed up a lot of our psyches during this deal.
It, in this conversation of the 4-day work week, was it the Netherlands or somewhere made it illegal for a boss to contact an employee after work hours, or it was something like that?
Yeah. Where, I don't know if it went through or if it was something that was proposed, or maybe it was France. Maybe
I
France.
I don't think somewhere. So. But it whatever. I think that because this is the difference between our generation and like the generations before us is like they actually like left work and came home and didn't work again because it's like they didn't have a computer at home. They didn't have their phones. Like
yep.
Work ended at work. Our problem is even people that have 9-to-5 jobs, they're working when they're not being paid to work all of the time. So
yes.
The idea of you cannot be contacted about work after work is over only is fair and it only makes sense.
I completely agree.
I don't think it's possible given the nature of a lot of people's jobs, you mm-hmm. know, like the emergent nature of certain industries. Like
it would depend on the job, though, because there are sure. a lot of jobs that probably could have that. But mm-hmm. like people are so used to just like having their phones be on all the time when they're on vacation or whatever that like that's what's fucking everybody up, too.
Yeah.
Right. But like small business owners, right, who are like, this person didn't do their job, but it's after work hours and there's a mistake. Like, I just am trying to put myself in like the shoes of a small business owner where it's like, it needs to be fixed now.
Yeah.
It's like for, you know, it's a huge deal for me that it's not fit, you know, and only this person knows how to fix it. I'm like, I don't know yeah. if it's actually executable in a realistic way.
But Jack really does bring up an excellent point, is that everybody up until, you know, 30 years ago when they would go home,
you're done.
They literally could not do their job. You know, they just couldn't do it because it was, yeah, you might be able to crunch numbers if you're an accountant on your personal computer or something, but for the most part, you didn't. And we all do it now.
Yes. Guilty or not guilty?
Non-stop work. I think the 5-day work week is guilty.
All right, guilty.
All right, yes, guilty.
Mm. Oh, it was my idea, so yeah.
But you didn't know. You went back and forth.
Well, I'm on the fence because I'm just like, am I going to hate that? Because I just think about like us wanting to grow our own business. Like, what if it was like weekends are off limits?
Yeah, but that...
That's a little different.
But we're like a deadline-driven industry, you know? So it's hard.
I know, but we're our own bosses. I think for like the like quintessential 9-to-5 job employee is different than owning your own business.
That's
like
true.
That's how what I was saying in the beginning is I've created my own hours my entire life. So I like can't talk to that.
About this.
Because yeah. I can't. I don't have, you know, the experience to actually, whatever. Anyways, yeah. Guilty.
Guilty.
Everybody deserves a little bit more me time, you know?
Woohoo.
Okay. Well, when we come back, it is time for some True Crime Rewind.
When I was growing up, I took French in high school, but I could never get the language to stick. I wanted to be fluent so bad, but it never happened. I just couldn't focus and I couldn't practice enough and it didn't work. But thankfully, there's Rosetta Stone, which is the most trusted language learning program, and it's available on desktop or it can be used as an app on your phone or tablet. Rosetta Stone is different. It immerses you in so many ways, and with its intuitive process, you can pick up any language naturally, first with words, then phrases, and then sentences, and before you know it, boom, conversations. Plus, with Rosetta Stone's True Accent feature, you'll get feedback on how well you're pronouncing words. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, the First Degree listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/first. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/first today. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for all of your springtime goals. If you don't have time, Factor's ready-to-eat meals are on the table in 2 minutes. So you just get to eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, cleaning up. You really just heat and savor the good stuff without all of the stress. You can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. Plus, you can pause and reschedule your deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Factor is your solution to premium, fast meals without the need for cooking. And they're celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. I'm so busy, so it's amazing to just have Factor meals in the fridge for whenever I realize that I'm starving and I don't have any time to cook anything. They're amazing, they're healthy, and they keep you fueled all day long. Head to factormeals.com/degree50 and use code degree50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month. That's degree50 at factormeals.com/degree50. 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Hey, there's no reason to feel sad or guilty about the things you aren't using anymore. Whether it was a fancy dress you wore to a gala, expensive heels that only go with one of your outfits, or that crossbody bag from when you were in your music festival era. Somebody out there wants what you don't, and the Real Real makes it easy to get it to them. When your past becomes their future, everyone wins, especially the planet. For the Real Real, Earth Month isn't just another month. It's what they do every day. At any given moment, they're finding new homes for over 1 million unique items within their community of 35 plus million people. They're the largest luxury reseller in the world and making a tangible difference towards a more sustainable future for fashion. Resale reduces the amount of fashion waste in landfills, lowers greenhouse gas emissions, and offers an alternative to the cycle of consumption propagated by fast fashion. The Real Real has kept over 37 million items in circulation and out of landfills. This month only, new shoppers get 20% off when they shop on therealreal.com using code FIRST. That's therealreal.com using the code FIRST.
True crime.
Yeah, it's rewind time.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to True Crime Rewind. We are going to be escaping. Escape rooms are big.
Ooh.
You know.
Yeah.
That's like a thing. That's a big thing. People love the escape rooms. And, you know, the when people think of escapes, though, the biggest thing you think about is prison escapes. Mm. Now, we talked about the Dillinger escape The most famous prison escape is Alcatraz, because when they built Alcatraz, they built it on an island. There are sharks in between the island and the mainland.
And it's cold. For the record, so they built it on an island in Northern California, just off the coast of San Francisco, Billy.
Yes.
Just not in the Bahamas.
Not in the Bahamas. And they said, this is inescapable. They went and said that. So they're daring everybody to be like,
it's meant to be very treacherous waters with very, very fast, dangerous currents, riptides. It was meant to be inescapable because if you attempted to swim off this island to the mainland, you would die either by drowning, hypothermia, sharks. Like, there's no way somebody could swim that far. Right. Mm-hmm. And survive. And that was, this is the best place ever for a prison.
Yeah. And there was a lot, there wasn't a lot of, you know, like being able to escape. Obviously, you can't escape in the back of a truck, which we hear about a lot. And a lot of people that worked there actually stayed there, you know, so there wasn't a lot of boat activity either going in and out.
Oh, they lived there?
No. Yeah. Yeah. So Frank Morris and brothers John and Clarence Anglin, they began a project where they took spoons from the cafeteria, and they also were able to get some saw blades from the wood shop. And they spent half a year making their ventilation ducts in their cells larger. So they would just kind of pick off the plaster that was in there. Each day, they would cover the ducts with cardboard, which looked like the cell wall, because these ducts, you know, they were really small. They made the hole bigger and bigger and bigger so they could squeeze through it, obviously. Eventually, they finally said, all right, we're good. We're going to do it. They actually ran through it once. They did something that has become pretty infamous. They created papier-mâché dummy heads of themselves and then put them in their cell beds so that when the guards were going around doing head counts at night, they looked in and then saw that there was a person there, but there really wasn't a person. It was actually a papier-mâché dummy. They created out of a bunch of, I think it was raincoats, an inflatable raft. It was a 6-foot by 14-foot raft. And then they escaped. Never found again. They grabbed the raft. They slid down a pipe. They went through the ventilation shaft, got through the prison, slid down a pipe from the prison roof, and then we never heard from them again.
But doesn't that mean they could also have died?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, okay, I just want to make sure that, like, if they were never heard from again and never seen again and no evidences of them resurfacing, like, they're either really good criminals or Alcatraz is, in fact, inescapable.
Yes. Yes.
But I think that everybody likes to think that, you know, they went down to Brazil and started a new
everyone
life.
Everyone loves a folk hero.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. But, you know, unfortunately, we do not know. But Clint Eastwood made a movie out of it. And if you ask anybody if anybody ever escaped, they would say yes.
Like, I feel like most people escape out of that ventilation thing. Don't you think the ducts, like, after, you know, the 100th escape out of a ventilation duct, don't you think that they'd kind of redo it?
Or put like a caged wall and, you know what I mean? Like in the middle of one that's only, like, you think they would have come up with some booby trapping.
Like some knives that were like sticking out once you tried to
booby trap. The warden should booby trap the ducts.
They should.
You're not going to have any escapes.
It's a tale as old as time. I'm like, how many escapes have you heard? That's what Ted Bundy did. Like, everybody does it.
I mean, look at the Shawshank Redemption, how they did it. Well, yeah. They went through the pipes.
It's a similar thing.
It was good.
Okay, so we've got a very famous one. You guys have seen the movie Catch Me If You Can.
Mm-hmm.
Steven Spielberg directed, Leonardo DiCaprio, and Tom Hanks starred. So so Frank Abagnale, he was a check forger. He forged about $2 million in bad checks, which is also called hanging paper, by the way. And he fooled people into thinking that he was a Brigham Young University professor, that he was a doctor, and that he was actually a pilot. Now, he never actually got tried to fly a plane, but he got all of like the perks of what it would be like to be a pilot. So he spent 6 months in a prison in, you know, when he was being chased around everywhere, spent 6 months in a prison in Sweden, goes to the United States. He's sentenced 12 years to an the federal pen in Atlanta. And then he actually escaped. So using Ford's documents, he, and also his power of persuasion, he was able to earn the trust of guards and said he needed to meet somebody outside the prison walls with this false identity stuff. And he said he needed to borrow a car. They gave him a car, and then he was gone. But he was later arrested in Washington, D.C. 2 months later, and he got 4 years. And then famously, he actually started earning a lot of money because the banks hired him to figure out what was, you know, fake checks, because he was really good at spotting fake checks because he used to make them.
Damn.
Yeah. So the most recent famous prison escape happened on June 6, 2015. And that was when two prisoners, Richard Matt and David Sweat, were found to be unaccounted for during the morning count. Now, that was at 5:30 in the morning. They were last seen the night before. And then, you know, when you don't find a prisoner, everything goes haywire. We actually had, when I grew up, I grew up a mile away from a prison, and every Saturday at 2 p.m., they would sound the horn just to test it. And people would escape there. And then when people would escape, they would lock everybody in the classrooms. If we were in school, it was crazy.
Ooh,
now spooky. That I think about it, it's very, very odd, but it was just what we did. And then, you know, 2 p.m., you knew the horn was going off on Saturday.
Interesting.
So these guys actually had tunneled. They built a tunnel for 500 feet. So it went 500 feet outside of the prison wall. They had tunneled out. They were actually housed in what was called the honor block, and that was the privileged housing unit. So they had access to a bunch of different things, card tables, you know, like wall-mounted telephones and all this kind of thing. They apparently got tools from contractors during the night, and then they returned them the next day.
Well, and in the movie, I mean, if you ever watch Escape from Dannemora, which it's like Patricia Arquette, Benicio del Toro, and I don't remember who the third guy was, but like in the movie, they were working because they were privileged in the prison. They were working with tools, like in a like workman's shop.
Right.
So they portray it that way, as that's how they got the tools. And what we'll come to know is that these two prisoners had actually help from someone inside the prison in the form of a corrections officer named Joyce Mitchell. So that's where things get really salacious, because they were actually having a relationship with her. When I say they, because they were in like a, they weren't quite a throuple, but she was sort of, you know, engaging with both of them.
Yes. Yeah. And which is shown a lot.
Like hooking up with, but I don't know much about this case. She was hooking up with both of them separately, or like in a.
Separately.
I like how that's the salaciousness that you go on, instead of like somebody that works in a prison just having a sexual relationship with a guard.
It is salacious. I mean, that's what people cling to, and that's why it's a movie. It's like she was, you know, and again, it's like she was in a marriage. She'd been married a long time. You know, she was manipulated.
Looking for some fun on the side.
Well, these guys are sociopathic criminals and manipulated her, and it was the first time she's ever had this much attention. And she's a criminal too, but I feel bad for her a little bit.
Yes. So she had provided them with hacksaw blades, chisels, other tools. She was going to be the getaway driver, but then she kind of had a panic attack that morning and said she backed out because she still loved her husband. Now, one of the things that was going on here is that there was actually evidence that she was hiring those guys to try and kill her husband.
Oh, shit.
Which is messed up.
And she didn't go through with it.
She did not go
through. Her husband's okay.
No. Yes, the husband is okay. And she kind of had a crisis of faith and said, wait a minute, I'm sorry, guys. You know, I helped them. And this is what's going on, because everybody was freaking out at this. So on June 17th, it was revealed that Mitchell, she was suspended without pay. And yes, they revealed that she had discussed having her husband killed in a murder for hire plot. So they originally were thinking that they weren't going to get very far, but the search then expanded beyond 16 square miles, which is originally where they were searching. These guys, you know, there was in a confrontation, Richard Matt was actually shot in Franklin County, New York, by Border Patrol. And then as far as Sweat goes, Canadian Border Patrol. Okay. And no, was it? No, he was
Where
shot
else
by.
Where was it have been?
What no, he was shot by Patrol? U.S. Border Patrol.
Well, right. But trying to cross near to Canada, cross. The Canada border.
Yes. On June 28th, Sweat had been walking along the side of the road when a trooper saw him. And this trooper was a really, really good shot. So Sweat starts to run. And then this guy shoots him from 73 yards and hits him in the shoulder and left arm.
Damn.
And he was only 1.5 miles from the Canada-U.S. border.
Mm, so close, but so, so far.
So far.
Wow.
So those are the three big escapes.
Dannemora is my favorite. I love the like soap opera elements.
Yeah. Very salacious.
Yes. Mm.
So these people did a lot of bad things, but we're going to hear about the worst things that you people have done next.
You ever meet someone who seems kind of off? Whether it's a creepy neighbor or random phone number that keeps calling you, Truthfinder has you covered. You can search for people by name, address, phone number, email, and more. Truthfinder can be especially helpful for running confidential background checks on anyone you're planning to meet from online dating apps. Go to truthfinder.com/podcasts for a special offer. That's truthfinder.com/podcasts to access your special offer today.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You are a horrible person.
What's the worst thing you've ever done?
Come one, come all. It's time to bear all. Friends and family gather around. You might be going underground. Oh my gosh, that was improv.
Wow, that was gorgeous.
When I said underground, I meant to hell. But you won't be, because nothing you do is that bad. I'm sorry. I didn't want to scare you.
Unless it is.
Unless it is. And then you know what? You don't tell us your name, so that doesn't matter anyway. We're going to just dive right into it. You guys ready?
Yep.
Yes.
Hey, Jack, Billy, and Alexis. Sorry I don't sound like a sexual cowboy. But anyway, the worst thing I've ever done. So I was living with my mom, her boyfriend, and my stepsister. I was about, like, I don't know, 13 or 14. And we had a dog. And the dog was my mom's boyfriend's dog. And the dog had shit inside on the floor. And my mom's boyfriend was like, he was a douche. And he was yelling at me to clean it up. And so I did. And for whatever reason, as I was still cleaning it up, he was like getting in my face and yelling at me still. And so I took this napkin with shit on it. And I wiped it on his face. And he got pissed, of course. And he was like, oh, that's disgusting. And he was trying to wipe it back on my face. And I wasn't letting him. And he got even more mad about that. And he's like, ooh, like, I don't know. He was pretty much saying, like, it's not fair. Like, you have to allow me to wipe shit on your face now. But I did not let him. And it was good. It was definitely not the worst thing I've ever done. I don't regret it at all. bye.
This is one of the most straightforward, worsty, you know, admissions. It's not a very nuanced thing. It's like you didn't like your mom's boyfriend and you were like, I'll clean up your dog shit, but then I'm going to wipe it on your face. But you didn't hide it from him. He knew and he tried to wipe it back on yours.
Yes.
And honestly, it is a sign of disrespect. But he did try to do it back.
But maybe he deserved it. Maybe he was a fucking dick.
Honestly, you sound very defiant. And like, don't sell yourself short. You also sound like a sexual cowboy.
Yes, I meant to lead with that. You are very sexual cowboy-esque. You have a twang, maybe.
And honestly, a defiance about you that I find truly attractive. Because you didn't just secretly wipe shit on something this guy loved in hiding.
Yeah.
You wipe shit on his face to his face.
Yes, that takes a lot of gumption. And you know what? They probably were doing that back in the Wild West.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you know, as gumption, cowboys.
Yes.
You
have a cowboy spirit.
Deep rooted in defiance, I don't remember, and gumption and balls.
In reading about Jesse James and Billy the Kid, I don't remember the scene where they wipe dog shit on.
No, but you know what
face.
They would do? They do like really cowardly stuff, like slap someone in the face with a glove.
Yes.
And frankly, like this is more hardcore.
I don't think
than
they were
that.
Doing that either.
You know, they were slapping people with a glove in the Wild West.
That glove probably, if you put it under a microscope, had remnants of feces on it. So I think that this all comes full circle,
and frankly,
a cowboy.
Everything does.
Yeah.
Don't put anything under a microscope if you want to enjoy your life.
No, absolutely. Absolutely not.
Seriously. Okay, well, we love you, sexual cowboy of the day.
Yes.
On to the next.
Okay, so this story can't possibly be the worst thing I've ever done, but my parents recently brought this up again to tell my boyfriend this story at dinner, and I knew I had to share it with you. So this takes place back in like the mid-90s, when I was a toddler, maybe 2 years old. And my family lived in a pretty small town, kind of like everybody knew everybody's situation. And my parents had both grown up and gone to high school in that town too. So we would go shopping at the local grocery store, and there was a man who worked there in the produce section who I'd always see. And my parents now described him as being kind of short, a little heavy set, balding, and always wearing brown glasses. So every time I would see this man, again, I was just a toddler, I would yell, "George!" at him and point and wave. So yeah, it was probably around 1996, and my parents watched a lot of Seinfeld. So my 2-year-old self was adamantly convinced that this poor man who was just trying to do his job in the produce section of the local supermarket was actually George Costanza. And the best part of this, or maybe the worst part, is that my parents went to high school with this guy, and his name was not George. I don't know if he knew that he looked like George Costanza, but it was kind of a cringy situation for me to put my parents in, even though now it's pretty funny to talk about. So now it's kind of a running joke in my family, but deep down, I feel a little bit of shame about it. I feel like being mistaken for George Costanza isn't exactly a compliment.
So it's right there. I beg to differ with you right there. Your first mistake is assuming people are offended by being compared to George Costanza. I don't think I physically resemble George Costanza, but I think that the neuroses are not too far, a far cry, you know? And what did he look like? I want to know more. And you know what? Maybe your parents love Seinfeld. Maybe he loves Seinfeld.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think that I love, you know, this isn't a bad thing. I think that she maybe just thought of us more so and was like, they need to hear my story.
I mean, I do think it's hysterical that, like, if he knew it, maybe if at the time you were two, if he was in his 30s and he's like, fuck, I look like George Costanza. It's like fully possible that his feelings are hurt, but he's not thinking about it anymore. If anything, maybe you motivated him. Like if a 2-year-old thinks is criticizing me, like maybe I need to get my shit together.
And to be honest, I mean, Jason Alexander was a comedic genius. Playing George Costanza. So if somebody is comparing you to this honest gold, comedic gold, then I would take it as a compliment.
Comedic gold.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, who would you not want to be, you know, from the Seinfeld cast? Who would you not want to be like, you know? I mean, I could see on a bad hair day, a 2-year-old pointing at me and yelling Kramer.
I'd rather be Costanza than Kramer. I'll say that.
Yeah. Especially if I'm wearing one of my sweaters.
Yeah.
I'd rather be Costanza than almost anyone, frankly. Like, I think it's the best Seinfeld character you can be.
Again, I think it's a compliment.
Besides the soup guy.
Yeah.
Who I think is a national treasure. Putty's pretty good too.
Yeah.
Putty's the best.
Putty's good.
I love Putty.
Newman.
That's what I'm saying. Nobody wants to be Newman.
Ah, he's not so bad.
Newman's great.
He's not.
I know, but you don't want to be the Newman of the group.
Yeah.
No.
I love that. Mm-mm. All right. Well, Lex, I heard that you are a little bit proud of this Costanza stanza.
Well, only because it's in keeping with the theme of the episode. And here we go. The title is George is a Prison. Locked in a body that's stout and of poor height. I'm bald, disproportioned. My clothes don't fit right. My once perfect hands have since been destroyed. My heart never full is always devoid. Locked in a George meat suit with nowhere to hide. Only worse than my exterior is what's on the inside.
Ooh.
No escape to be had. And ahead I must forge. There's no getting out of the prison of George.
Yes.
Wow.
That's it right there. I'm not going to get better than that.
George is a prison.
George is a prison.
And I wrote that in like 20 seconds. Sometimes it's like free flowing. Yeah. Sometimes I'll agonize over it for like 2 hours. It just depends on my frame of mind. And it happened to be a moment.
It was gorgeous.
That was fantastic.
It was gorgeous. Engorged.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
You ever meet someone who seems kind of off? Whether it's a creepy neighbor or random phone number that keeps calling you, Truthfinder has you covered. You can search for people by name, address, phone number, email, and more. Truthfinder can be especially helpful for running confidential background checks on anyone you're planning to meet from online dating apps. Go to truthfinder.com/podcasts for a special offer. That's truthfinder.com/podcasts to access your special offer today.